All right, good afternoon, everyone. We are stealing without shame an article and podcast from R. Albert Mohler that was given on June 28, 2020. And I was having a conversation with somebody last night who had stumbled upon Mohler's podcast for the first time and didn't know who he was, and which is kind of inconceivable in my world because I kind of feel like everyone knows who Moses is and everyone knows who Mohler is. And so, but this man didn't. So Al Mohler is the professor of Southern Seminary, which is in Louisville, Kentucky.
The president.
The president. Thank you. Sorry. He's the president of Southern Seminary. He's been there forever. He was the youngest president of Southern Seminary in their history. And Southern Seminary is a Southern Baptist seminary with a strong Reformed bent to it. Is that a fair statement, John?
I think so.
Yeah, Mohler's a five-point Calvinist, I think.
And I would say that one of the reasons, like, even I didn't know who Al Mohler was maybe before 6 or 7 years ago is because the way I grew up and the church I grew up in, you didn't know who Southern Baptists were on purpose.
Right, yeah.
You know, because they were in the objectionable, unassociable camp. You couldn't even consider being grouped in with a Southern Baptist and be going to heaven in the church I went to.
Yeah, I made an idiot of myself. I was went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky for air assault school many years ago. It would have been in the 90s, the early 90s. And I'd just been going to Brain, I think, for maybe 2 years or maybe 3 years at that point. And I Sunday morning I went to this church, and it was great preaching and everything. And at the end of the service, John, I figured out I was in a Southern Baptist church. And so afterwards, during the handshaking time, I said something to the preacher about, can you help me find a good independent Baptist church or something like that? Because I knew that it would be sin for me to worship in the Southern Baptist church for two more Sundays. I'm not exaggerating right now. I mean,
I'm there.
Right. I mean, I needed
the days.
And he said to me, he said, well, I won't help you find one, but I'll take you to lunch and tell you why I can't. And so he, sure enough, the next weekend took me to lunch on a Saturday because school was Monday through Friday. And I worshipped at that church for the next 3 weeks while I was at Aerosol School.
And it changed your life.
It didn't change my life, but it did open me up to the fact that there were Southern Baptists that preached the word. Mm-hmm. And so then when, who was the music guy here before? Wally Bearden.
Mm-hmm.
When Wally Bearden, I went to Wally Bearden and I said, Wally, I am craving some preaching that I need to be fed. Because at that point, I could pretty much finish many of the Sunday morning sermons. I'd heard them enough times. And Pam would just elbow me to death, Jack, because I would start finishing the sentence. And she would tell me to shut up and pay attention. I mean, well, in kind words.
You already had paid attention.
Yes, right.
Let me guess, he told you Johnny Hunt.
He told me Johnny Hunt.
Yeah.
And I was open at that point because I'd already been to a Southern Baptist church in Kentucky that was solid. He was preaching the Bible. And then I started listening to Johnny Hunt. He was preaching through the book of Acts. And he was doing some bizarre thing where he would read verses and then he'd talk about it. And then the following week, he'd come back to the same passage where he left off. So I literally moved through the whole book of Acts on Sunday nights with Johnny Hunt. This one we had dial-up service. The early days of internet. But I realized there was this whole thing called a Southern Baptist.
Right.
Then I was really blown away when I found out there was actually Presbyterians that preached the gospel too. Because having grown up in this church, all I heard about was the fact that he had to leave the Presbyterian church in order to get saved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now I figured out that there's actually Southern Baptists and Presbyterians that both preach the gospel. Yeah. Craziest thing in the world.
My mom had to leave the Lutheran church in order to be saved. True. Right. Her own church was
right.
Preaching about bugs and pugs and stuff like that.
All right, but this is a great, great article, and it's so relevant and it's so appropriate, and we just are going to shamelessly share it with you. If you want to hear it in Mohler's own voice, you can back up and listen to it on June 18th, and you can find it for yourself. But let's get started, Brian.
All right, Black Lives Matter. Taken as a sentence is profoundly true. God made every human being in his image, which means every life on the planet at every stage matters. Yet that sentence is understood nearly universally as expressing approval of a movement rooted in critical race theory, which is grounded in destructive Marxist ideology. Words matter, especially when words are at the center of controversy and conflict. It is the responsibility of all people to look at words carefully, to understand what the words are and what they mean, and what they are doing. Three short and simple words have formed a sentence that has captured the attention of the nation. The words Black Lives Matter, and particularly controversial, having become a part of American conversation in 2020. Black Lives Matter, taken as a sentence, is profoundly true. And God made every human being his image, and which means that every life on the planet at every stage matters. Every human being possesses full human dignity and, by extension, full human rights. Furthermore, saying that black lives matter does not mean that other lives do not matter. Indeed, when some people hear black lives matter, they respond by saying that it is wrong to single out one part of humanity. Ever since the phrase sprang into the American imagination, there were others who asserted that police lives matter and blue lives matter or all lives matter. During a particular moral or historical context, it is not wrong to say something emphatically directed like Black Lives Matter. Just consider, as an example, Nazi Germany during the 1930s and 1940s. The Nazi Party adopted a deadly anti-Semitism that led to the horrors of genocide during the Holocaust. At that time, to say that Jewish lives matter would not only have been right, but would have been morally urgent and necessary.
All right, when I heard that for the first time, because I listened to Al Mohler's podcast every single day, and I thought, what a great argument. I wish I had thought of that myself, because he's spot on with the, there's nothing wrong with putting a particular focus on a particular group. And I would like to add, just for a moment of conversation, we ought to be saying, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Steve, Native American lives matter, because if anyone's concerned about the plight of a group of people in America right now, you ought to visit an Indian reservation right now, and what you would find is that is a group that is struggling beyond our wildest imaginations with things like hygiene and the alcohol and drug abuse that is just rampant beyond just inconceivable. To these reservations that Native Americans are living on is just heartening, but there isn't a kind of a capstone moment that's generating all the media attention to bring to our in living color the devastation that's present on these Indian reservations. So I really appreciated that point.
Fast forward to America in June of 2020. Today, there are very real and urgent moral concerns about the lives and well-being of black Americans. It is not wrong in our context, therefore, to say Black Lives Matter as a sentence. But it is not that simple. Black Lives Matter did not emerge merely as a sentence. Those three words function as a message and a platform making a significant political statement, one guided by Marxist ideology that seeks to revolutionize our culture and society. Understanding the Black Lives Matter movement. The Black Lives Matter movement was organized by three women, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tometi, with Alicia Garza serving as the primary spokesperson for the movement. The phrase rose to prominence in the year 2014 when protests broke out after the deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner in New York City. Both of these men died in confrontations with police. Once the protests began, so too did the use of the hashtag Black Lives Matter. Over the past 6 years, Black Lives Matter has become a well-defined political movement. It is important to recognize that the movement has now joined a network of similar groups that established for the movement for black lives. Many of the same people are still involved, and during the specific national ferment of 2020, the amalgamation of influence...
Are you sure you pronounced that right?
Amalgamation,
yes. Okay, all right.
Of influential organizations, political leaders, and corporations have declared themselves as allied with the movement. They are using the hashtag, putting it on their advertising and websites to make clear their solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right, and this has gotten to the point where the expression is, Do you want to be on the right side of history, or do you want to be on the wrong side of history? Yeah. And so all these major corporations are lining up with their newsletters and every single...
updating their webpage.
Right, right. Every single president of every single retail organization feels it's their job to send out some carefully crafted newsletter, kind of a letter announcing where they stand on it. You have a thought, Jack? It looks like you're...
I mean, just recently, I mean, just this past week, I mean, and these aren't just like businesses who have specific political agendas. I mean, things, entities you would think are rather neutral. I mean, Blue Cross Blue Shield North Carolina, our insurance company, they have a statement about we stand against racism and click here to learn more. Amazon, which, you know, obviously they have their political affiliations, but it's a shopping website. They have their statement right on the homepage. As soon as you log in, you know, you have to read that and agree to their cookie statement.
In order to understand the movement, we need to look at the statement of the organization made available on the Black Lives Matter website. That's where you went, Miles?
Yes, sir.
To the Black Lives Matter website. It begins by saying that Black Lives Matter Global Network began to organize as a chapter-based, member-led organization whose mission was to build local power and to intervene when violence was inflicted on black communities by the state and vigilantes. In the years since, we've committed to struggling togetherness and to imagining and creating a world free of anti-blackness, where every black person has social, economic, and political power to thrive. All right, so that's their agenda.
Part of
their agenda.
Yeah. Their website then lists several affirmations which unfold with an alarming intensity. They begin by stating, "We work vigorously for freedom and justice for black people, and by extension, all people. We see ourselves as part of the global black family, and we are aware of the different ways we are impacted or privileged as black people who exist in different parts of the world. We are guided by the fact that all black lives matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression, economic status, ability, disability, religious beliefs or disbeliefs, immigration status, or location." At this point, a theme is beginning to emerge. "We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. We are self-reflexive to do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift black trans folk, especially black trans women who discontinue to be disproportionately to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence."
So let's stop right there, because that's just a giant paragraph that has to be dealt with. Because how does a Bible-believing person get behind that? I mean, we can get behind, we're guided by the fact that all black lives matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity. If we're talking about the basic human dignity that we are going to afford to each and every sinner on the planet. You know, Jesus did it like this: go and sin no more. All right? He didn't stone him to death. He told him to go and sin no more. But when you transition to Moeller's next paragraph, "We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. We are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift black trans folks, especially black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence." And again, we have to be so careful here. So we are not suggesting for a moment that violence be inflicted on anyone.
Yeah.
No violence. No violence whatsoever. No violence with words. No violence with anything. But we're at the point now that to say that sin is now considered violence. You are impacting my conscience. You are impacting my self-esteem. You're impacting who I am. In other words, you can't say anything.
Which is so ironic, considering the previous paragraph that Al Mohler cites from their website, is that they don't. Okay, they said, "We're guided that all black lives matter regardless of," and then they listed, "religious beliefs. We are guided by our religious beliefs that transsexual, homosexual, this sexual crisis that America is facing, that that is sin. And so it's, well, because, yes, you might believe this, but because it disagrees with our other values, you're no longer entitled to believe that.
Well, last weekend or the weekend before, I can't remember which, but I got an invitation from one of the county commissioners to go on a Black Lives Matter march and to participate. Now, I chose not to because I was running my lawn care business on Saturday and I don't have any time for that. But even if I wasn't, I can't go and stand in unity with an organization that has this perspective on sexual orientation. I can't do it. My Bible says, in the beginning, God created them male and female. And so I can't take a side that would be contrary to that.
Could you compare it to not participating in a food drive at Planned Parenthood?
Sure you could.
We're not disagreeing with the fact that there are individuals who are in need of food, but because of the organization that is sponsoring the event...
Well, when we stand there with the organization, just by your very presence, you're saying there, in some part, I identify with this organization. How do you not?
All right, let's continue. In the aftermath, the Black Lives Global Network adopts and promotes the entire worldview of sexual revolution, which seeks to liberate humanity from the oppressive chains of biological gender. They seek to foster a queer-affirming network where, when we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather the belief that in all the world are heterosexual. Now, again, am I guided by the Word of God, or am I guided by societal norms that can be changed?
Yeah. Which is so unfortunate because... I mean, go look at the first couple chapters of Genesis, and what you have established, and Dr. Moeller has already addressed it, that black lives matter because they were created in the image of God, which is also the same location where we get that Genesis chapter 2, that he which created them at the beginning created them both male and female, that the man should leave his family and cleave unto his wife, and that they become one flesh. So the same location, the exact same book, the same section of Scripture where we get the fact that all humans are born by their Creator with human dignity is also where we get our belief that there is one way for sexual orientation to be that is according to God's plan.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that would be interesting to know, and I'm sure we haven't done the research yet, or maybe one of you has, but, you know, was this paragraph in their statement in the beginning, or was this added as the movement has gained popularity, and now that we see in our culture that the transgen movement and all of those gender issues are trying to, in a sense, attach themselves to every movement possible within our culture, because they see within every movement and every governmental agency or traditional thing like the church, they see that they're under attack, and I'm using air quotes on the radio. But so, you know, that would be fascinating to know whether this is just kind of like kind of caving into the pressure that the current world is in, or as if that was this one of their founding principles. And I would hazard a guess that it was probably added in later to appease those who were
because if you're not for us, you're against us.
Well, and here's why. Because I don't think the facts support what they're saying. Okay, if you think, and this is just anecdotal, and I don't have all the data in front of me, but I don't think I'm out too far on a limb here. If you think of all of the issues that we've had with police violence against African Americans, it's mostly been against African males.
Yeah.
I can't think of an African female that was shot, held down, and strangled.
There was one, the girl in Louisville, that was shot in her.
But they entered the home.
But that had nothing to do with transgender or anything like that.
I think that's your point.
My point is that most of the time, really, the main issue is the distrust between the police of African-American males. The police just go into it with their mind made up about this guy walking down the street. That's the issue. That's what the Black Lives Matter was really addressing at the beginning. And that's a real issue because that's a real problem.
Yeah.
If a policeman is riding in his car and just looks out there and makes a decision about somebody based on the color of the skin and the neighborhood they're in and if they're wearing dreads or if their pants are low or anything like that and enters into a situation without regard to information and thought, then they need to be corrected. I mean, that needs to be fixed. So my question is then, what does this have to do with it? I think it was an add-on. I think it was an addendum. I think that just like everything else in our society right now, this is a big push to add it to everything. I mean, I've even heard it added to COVID and why transgender people are being fairly mistreated because of COVID in the hospital. And so it's just like an add-on thing, I believe. I don't have any proof of that.
Jonathan, the whole point there is that there's not enough, and I'm not going to broad brush it and say that there is no violence or there is no mistreatment or injustice against black trans people, but the fact of the matter is it's so minute that they would not get the media coverage, they would not get the attention of their organization if they only had that as their...
Right, but I hear you saying, John, that you don't think in 2013 when it started that was their focus.
No, I don't.
That it's been added on, that this...
Right, I would doubt that paragraph would even be...
Rucksack just keeps getting bigger and bigger as every little issue in the world. Again, I want to go back to, they seek to foster a queer-forming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather the belief that all in the world are heterosexual. Again, the tight grip that we're talking about, Mr. and Mrs. Christian, listen to you, is the grip of God on the world as the creator who has the right to establish law, moral law. It's not that we are oblivious to the fact that there are other people who are practicing these behaviors. That's not the case at all.
No. And it's really disappointing that, you know, from at least my perspective, I see a lot of students, a lot of young people, students that have gone off to college, that keep reposting stuff on social media, primarily Instagram, with the Black Lives Matter hashtag or something along, pushing this narrative. And the fearful thing that I see is it's not that we have a problem with standing up for injustice. As Christians, we should stand up against injustice because we serve a God who is just. And that's a reflective attribute that we can support in our community. But the issue is when we do absolutely no research into an organization and we just share things blindly because we want to... Well, I don't want any of my black friends to think I'm not with them, so I want to be able to at least, stand in solidarity via social media. And I think some it's just virtue signaling. They're trying to, hey, look at me, recognize me, because, I mean, if we're honest, even before, without this this issue of injustice on the table, students and young people across the nation use social media simply as an affirmation of who I am. Mm-hmm. I want my selfie to get likes. And so that's the exact same concept that rolls into it now. And so we have Christian students in our own church that are sharing stuff, and they're posting this so that they can stand in solidarity against injustice, which we would encourage them to, but they're doing so with an organization in which we were like, hold on, there's a whole lot of red flags that if you at least read their belief statement, you say, this is anti-God.
Right, but you just, the word that you just said was read.
I'm sorry.
Well, we're not reading.
Yeah. Should have been a YouTube video.
We're not reading.
No.
Who reads? I mean, Mohler's contention in the beginning is not, everyone doesn't agree with it. He said words matter.
Yeah.
We're living in a day and age in which words don't matter. Words don't matter.
Well, it all depends. Your belief statement, your what we believe, which, we have in front of us a 4-page document from Black Lives Matter website, these words don't matter to most people. It's whether or not I use those 3 words on my hashtag that matter. That's where we have drawn the line.
Well, and that's partly because we've gotten to the point where the gospel of the United States is we're supposed to find as much common ground as possible and, you know, help and agree with even everyone, even if we disagree with them, really at central issues of worldviews. I mean, we're supposed to coexist, and so the whole gospel is tolerance. So it stands to reason that if I believe in the essence of the person having intrinsic value created by God in the phrase Black Lives Matter, then I should just overlook the fact that they've got this one small clause in their thing right here.
Right.
We can agree to disagree on that.
But unfortunately, there's so much more. You know, that it's not just they have this one statement. I mean, they go on in their beliefs that they want to dismantle patriarchal practice.
Where are you at? Let's make sure we don't.
So I'm jumping out of Al Mohler's article, and I'm looking at this statement of beliefs from Black Lives Matter.
Share it with us then.
So let me back up just a little. It says, we build a space that affirms black women and is free from sexism, misogyny, and environments in which men are centered. We practice empathy. We engage comrades with the intent to learn about and connect with their context. We make our spaces family-friendly and enable parents to fully participate with their children. We dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts so that they can mother in private, even as they participate in public justice work. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. And then they pick up with we foster a queer-affirming network when they gather.
Well, Jack is just over there completely silent, by the way.
That's because it's going on the internet.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll continue. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structural requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another. Let's just stop and look at that. Now, there's a degree to which there's a truth in there that we can affirm. The body of Christ should be doing some of that. There's no doubt about that. But to suggest that we need to disrupt, and again, listen to the language, Western prescribed nuclear family. See, we as a Christian perspective would say that family is a God-ordained entity. Mom, dad, children. I mean, that kind of started, once again, in Genesis 2. It's kind of like a critical part of this. So we affirm this family, and yet we do recognize the need to take care of mothers, parents, children.
And I think that what we could say is we affirm this concept of family and even extended family, you know, the village, but not in order to allow anyone out of their God-given responsibility.
Right.
To be or to remain married or to be married in the first place, to remain married, to remain faithful, to be a good provider for your family, all of those things which are, you know, in their words, those are Western traditions that the man goes to work and the woman takes care of the children.
Right.
And so, I mean, let's just talk about the issue. That's the issue. What we have is an issue of faithfulness and willingness to, this is the role God gave me, I'm going to embrace it and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. But what we want to do is we want to create a society in which I can say, that is not really what I see for my life. Let me go over here and then get different results than what the law of nature tells me I'm going to do.
Right, right. This is really a sovereign God issue, John.
Yes.
In the end, this is really...
Because what I want to do is not go to work all day, but I want money at the end of the day.
Right.
And this isn't just a Black Lives Matter issue.
No, this is a sin issue.
This is, and really in our country, this is a young person issue. This is a generational issue. Because, you know, it's not just African-American folks that are struggling with this.
No.
You know, all of the children of America have been told they can have the good life without any work. And I think, actually, unfortunately, a lot of white Americans have been told, oh, that's the African-American people that talk and act like that. Well, not really.
All right, let's get to that. We build a space that affirms.
Kind of just read that. So we just read that. That's the Mohler's citing it. So when you look at this language, it becomes clear that Black Lives Matter and the movement for Black Lives share little in common with the civil rights movement of the 1960s. The movement's policy demands these distinctions are more clear in a booklet called A Vision for Black Lives, Policy Demands for Black Power, Freedom, and Justice. There, the movement for Black Lives explains that it has global ambitions, stating, while this platform is focused on domestic policies, we know that patriarchy, exploitative capitalism, militarism, and white supremacy know no borders. We stand in solidarity with our international family against the ravages of global capitalism and anti-black racism, human-made climate change, war, and exploitation. We also stand with descendants of African people all over the world in an ongoing call and struggle for reparations for the historical, and continuing harms of colonialism and slavery. Included in the vision document are policy proposals, including an end to capital punishment, to money bail, mandatory fines, fees, court surcharges, and defendant-funded court proceedings. It also includes, under item 6, an end to the war on black, trans, queer, and gender nonconforming people, including their addition to anti-discrimination civil rights protections to ensure they have full access to employment, health, housing, and education. The authors also demand reparations for the systemic denial of access to high-quality education opportunities in the form of full and free access for all black people, including undocumented and currently and formerly incarcerated people, to lifetime education, including free access to open admissions to public community colleges and universities, technical education, educational support programs, retroactive forgiveness of student loans, and support for lifetime learning programs. Under the Divest Invest section, the movement, among other things, demands the retroactive decriminalization, immediate release, and record expungement of all drug-related offenses and prostitution and reparations for the devastating impact of the war on drugs and criminalization of prostitution, including a reinvestment in the resulting savings and revenue into restorative services, mental health services, job programs, and other programs supporting those impacted by the sex and drug trade. Under economic justice, the movement for black lives asserts the need for a right to restored land, clean air, clean water, and housing, and an end to the exploitative privatization of natural resources, including land and water. Democratic control over how resources are preserved, used, and distributed, and do so while honoring and respecting the rights of our indigenous family. These are radical claims, which imply the abolition of private property. In this scenario, who would determine what land and water use constitute exploitation? And who would have the authority to seize property from owners who are deemed exploitative? Although this aspect of its messages is emphasized less than anti-racism, the group's literature demonstrates that the movement for black lives seeks an end to capitalism and free markets. The problem with critical race theory. The end of the document includes a glossary, which gets even more interesting. As I said at the beginning, words matter, which is why, in this case, the phrase Black Lives Matter actually means, according to the movement, something far more radical and subversive than simple English would lead you to believe. Capitalism, for example, is defined as an economic system in which products are produced and distributed for profit using privately owned capital goods and wage labor. Many feminists assert that a critique of capitalism is essential for understanding the full nature of inequality, as global economic restructuring based on capitalism reflects a particular ideology that celebrates individual wealth and accumulation at the lowest cost to the investor, with little regard for the societal cost and exploitation. These statements, definitions, and policy demands are saturated in Marxist ideology, promoting an intersectional worldview that is fundamentally subversive and destructive. Black Lives Matter operates from a worldview that undercuts human dignity. It sees each person's identity as determined by externally imposed social structures, which are in turn determined by the human desire to seize power and oppress others. Such identity politics entangles human identity in subjective materialist terms, diminishing the true beauty of what it means to be made in the image of God. It asserts that all meaning is humanly constructed, and it denies that human beings can never know, even in part, the objective nature of a reality that exists outside of themselves, because such objective truth does not exist. In short, the ideology of the Black Lives Matter movement attempts to upend the entire created order. It simply cannot fulfill its promises to bring about justice because it radically misunderstands human nature. It can never promote human flourishing. Marxist ideology versus Christian theology. In this way, the movement for black lives advances a cause entirely separate from the aspirations of men like Martin Luther King Jr. The civil rights movement drew on theological truth claims as foundational for its moral arguments and imperatives. Christian authority and the Bible formed the bedrock of the civil rights movement. The movement for black lives, however, places authority in mere human solidarity. Indeed, in the 1960s, the civil rights movement was led not just by black men, but by black clergy. They were pastors of churches with a connection to historic Christianity. In contrast, the Black Lives Matter movement is divorced from any institutional connection to the African American church. Instead of a theological foundation, the movement for black lives roots itself in critical race theory, which actually indicts the civil rights movement as far too mainstream. According to critical race theorists, what was needed in the 1960s was a revolution, not a correction of the American conscience and culture. If you recall, Martin Luther King Jr. openly called for Americans to live up to our national compact, not to reject it. The movement for black lives, by contrast, seeks to dismantle the foundations of American civilization. Because of the link between the movement for black lives and critical race theory, as well as intersectionality, it is not hard to understand why the movement is connected to the sexual and gender revolutions. What binds them all together is the pursuit of liberation. As its leaders stated, the movement seeks liberation from the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. In fact, Western civilization as a whole, according to the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement, represents an oppressive system that must be destroyed. The language of its affirmations and beliefs, sorry, my word was messed up, from cisgendered and black trans folk to transgender brothers and sisters, points to just how comprehensively the movement is governed by identity politics grounded in a worldview contrary to the convictions that guided the civil rights movement. An honest assessment of the movement demands that we take them at their word when we read their comments and official documents, when we survey the policies they propose and the worldview that guides their moral claims. It is clear that the movement for black lives promotes a revolutionary destructive agenda that is completely antithetical to a biblical worldview. Christians like me believe that God calls us to evaluate everything by his word, by the gospel of Jesus Christ. While we affirm the sentence, Black Lives Matter, without hesitation and with full enthusiasm, we simply cannot use the sentence because it will be heard nearly universally as a movement, not a sentence. The sentence is no longer a sentence. It is a movement, a platform, an agenda of revolution at odds with the gospel, contrary to and destructive of God's creational order. At the same time, Christians must be those who realize the hurt and fear of our African-American brothers and sisters, indeed, of our African-American neighbors and co-workers. We must be attentive to what they are saying. We must hear them, listen, and act in a way that demonstrates an urgent level of compassion and Christian love.
Wow. All right, that article is June 18, 2020, written by Al Mohler. If you want to go back and read it yourself, because it is pretty comprehensive in its presentation. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.